56% of people who go the extra mile in the organizations, you know, have an emotional attachment to the job. It's not about the manager, it's not about the team, it's not about the company, it's 56% of emotions. That's a lot of emotions, right? So that's where I always go, like, it's, there's a lot of pressure on the managers, and yes, leaders have a responsibility, they are in this role for a reason. But at the same time, what is the individual's responsibility, right? To become more self-aware. What is important to me? What do I care about? And the job and the company may not even be able to offer that, so I can't force that out from them.
Diane, I'm so happy having you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's really nice to be here.
Oh, nice. So let's start by understanding your journey. You went from hotel receptionists, now you are a business director.
Yeah.
Tell us about your journey briefly.
Sure. It's a great reflective question, actually, because, you know, it really kind of proves us, as, you know, how far we do come in life. We do have to reflect back, have that reverse gap. So I always made a conscious decision to get work experience quite early on, from high school onwards. And I thought hospitality, F&B, customer service is a really good place to learn the sort of how do you deal with customers and clients and, the, you know, sort of really interacting with a wide range of personalities as well. And so I joined the hotel. And that was a foundation, I think, as well for my further career, because kind of merely moving from into kind of recruitment, a lot of interaction with talent. I was back in the UK at the time. And then, you know, moving to Singapore, I moved in-house to sort of scale a startup. And that also kind of helped me to kind of gain more exposure to the HR side. So I covered that at one point, also around community, culture building, anything in between. And that has really kind of culminated in me becoming the business director of one of the business units in our current organization. That is all about talent, all about interactions with clients. So really, it's just a natural evolution of where I am today.
Nice. So you've been in talent acquisition for more than a decade. Yeah. So what have you seen, what has been the biggest changes in the past 5 to 10 years?
So as I mentioned, I worked in email markets, and what I already saw there 10 years ago was how welcoming they are to the external workforce. You know, we're talking about freelancers, contractors on project basis, welcoming the marketing agencies into the organization. Let's work together in better synergies. So when I arrived to Singapore, it was a little bit baffling how little freelancers were available and how not ready the companies were to welcome them, because there was a lot of trust issues, or like a little bit of even like sort of there were a little bit overwhelmness around, like, how do I even welcome somebody in? Like, we're not set up, you know? And I believe that's starting to change quite rapidly in APAC as well, which is a really welcome change. Then what else is there is really having a workforce of today, they're not going to be in the organization for a lifetime. So it's really about how do you create that experience that positively wows them, right? And they have this really, you know, whatever the time of the stint is, but they want to come back, you know? Like, we have more and more boomerangs now because they had a wonderful experience. And that's just something that you always, you know, it always brings a smile on my face when I hear people going back. It's like, you know, you did, well done, you did something really well there. And perhaps lastly, it's really like the workforce of today is really made up from so many more self-learners than we've ever had before, right? Yes, the university degrees and certifications have their place, they're an important part of the society, but at the same time, we can't discard the people who've been just, you know, learning on their own, a lot of sort of courses or any kind of technical skill set that they've gained. You know, today we have, you know, all these creators online, they are 6-second filmmakers, right? So they shoot, they edit, they, you know, promote, they look for partners. We've got people now in our organization, for example, they are able to work on a job where they're creating memes for a, you know, MNC on a full-time basis, and they love it, right? Like, because they're sort of infomaniacs and they're constantly looking for that coolest and hippest information out there. So it's definitely changing a lot, and in a very exciting ways as well.
So there's the changes, as I understood. One is about the gig economy, right? Mm-hmm. So there's more and more freelancers, and that's part of the normal day-to-day of companies welcoming them more. Also, you spoke about there's more self-learners, right? So people doing different things. And also there's people today, we don't see people staying in the company for a long time. It's just a matter of how can you give a strong experience so to wow the person, so that even the person wants to come back. Yeah. So that has been a big change. Nice. So now, I mean, you had an incredible experience with a scale-up where you went from 330 people to 1,200 in under 2 years in 10 different markets.
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience.
Oh, I still look back to that as one of the most rewarding challenges of my career. You know, I came from a recruitment background, so I moved in-house, and it's a different dynamics. Recruitment agencies have their place again in the sort of business world. But I moved in to first to kind of support a local business with my global experience. And just going in there and, you know, what I sort of started to realize from a get-go was really, again, talent acquisition is still often seen as the end of the sort of command, right? Like a chain of command in that way. And I was really, it's like, why is that? And it came to, what was clear to me at the time was, again, talent acquisition still think of themselves as the sort of, how do I say, just a service provider. It's like, this is what we do, but we're not business partners. So I was working very closely with my team to go like, hey, what is your responsibility to become better? Every time you go to a meeting with your hiring managers and partners, what do you bring on the table from the market, the insights, you know, anything you gather from talent, which is our customers in that case. And, you know, it was a beautiful shift that happened to a point where CFO at one point said, talent acquisition is the most important department in the organization, right? And it was, you know, it took a while. It took about relationship building. It's about speaking the way the departments speak. You know, customer service department will have its own needs than from a UX to engineering. So you have to constantly adjust, you know, your sort of focus as well with it. It was pretty intense in terms of the hiring. Like, it's hundreds of roles to fill at all times. The only way we succeeded was just the setting up a more systematic way of doing that. Startups, you know, I've always had experience working with startups. And, you know, a lot of the times they don't like the term process. So I changed it around a little bit in the organization just to kind of get a little bit more buy-in from the stakeholders. So I called it sort of recruitment flow, right? And again, and just getting them on board with that, and they're exactly kind of emphasizing the importance of this flow, both from a talent experience, but also from their experience as well. And, you know, the speed always comes into hand, you know, into conversation. So, and if we can start seeing the impact of it, they were happy with the results.
So can you take us through that process, that flow that you work on?
That recruitment flow. So like I said, it has to be systematic. So first thing first is that you have to be very clear. What are you looking for? Who are you looking for? And this is where I rely on sort of UX world of really creating personas first. It's like, who do we need for this department, this team? It doesn't have to be complicated. We're not talking about high level psychometric tests here. It's really about like personality. Who do they need to be? Do they have to be self-manager? You know, they have to be able to self-manage, go-getters, you know, just a couple kind of keywords around that. And then the technical side. You know, typically, you know, we talk about like, you know, wanting all of it, right? Like they have to have all of the experience, three key things, maybe max, right? Like they have e-commerce exposure, they have XYZ, you know, other areas that they have to have. And we'll remain flexible a little bit around the rest. And, you know, once you set that up, it's really about letting the TA do their job, and you know, anybody who's responsible for the recruitment, because you need time, you need a little bit of grace period before you can start comparing the data, which is the talent pool, the talent pipeline. Often we see, you know, stakeholders coming in like, where is the talent after three days, and it's not accurate, right? So you have to give that time. Once you go through that sort of two phase of pipelining, whoever's responsible will have these intro calls again, has to be a system behind what are you evaluating. Are you evaluating the same thing, same all the way? And once that's done, right, like this is really where I took, you know, sort of a lead from a development and agile product development world, because it is these 2 week sprints. So you complete all of the calls initially and you only shortlist, and you always have to have, you know, comparison in the same week if possible, right? Like don't let them scatter around next 3 weeks, we can have first round interviews. No, like you're going to focus on first week, you get all the interviews done. I'll talk to you at the end of the week and we can evaluate all of them at the same time. And the same thing it is, you know, just you're preparing yourself for the next week. You have your time blocked out already. You go to the second round and, you know, it's just speeds up everything. But most importantly, what I've, the feedback that I've received from the market, talent, our customers, is really, they feel respected. Because they know what's happening. They are very involved. They know that it's gonna take that many time, weeks. It's their job, right? Like they're talking about their careers and, you know, big part of their lives. And, you know, when somebody said that, I was like, wow, like that's a huge thing when our talent feel respected. And what it really kind of comes down to is like, there's a company level values and vision and sort of mission. At the very beginning, I said, we have a team vision, team mission. A lot of it was about being those strategic business partners and what does that entail? What do we have to do to get there? And also to, you know, how do you create that experience for talent that positively surprises them? And I think that was a really kind of key for us, and we saw the results of that as well.
Wow, I love that. Mm. And so what kind of results have you seen from that recruitment flow?
Recruitment flow? So firstly, I mean, the big thing here is we can't talk about the result until you don't have the data capture in place. So that was something as well, like I have always been rigorous about data needs to be captured religiously. And if you don't, team managers, you know, even individuals are not able to back up their worth or sort of value in terms of what they do, because a lot goes into every job that we do, right? Like the nitty-gritty little small things when they lead up to see these numbers. So you have to capture the points. It doesn't matter with technology what trackers you have, but when you start seeing the progress, that's when it really starts to work that magic, right? So the magic that we saw was that we were able to cut down the hiring process or the time from at least 4 months average to 2 months. Sometimes it was also 1.5, month and a half sort of thing as well. So it was quite a good and far, big drop, because it was so systematic that we just didn't allow it to flow into different directions. It was organized, it was systematic, cyclical, as I like to say. The second part of it was even the offer acceptance rate, you know, increased by 10% very quickly. Because again, it was not, we didn't give the talent the chance to go and consider much other options, because we kept them in the process, that we were involved, constantly engaged, gave them updates, and they knew what's coming and they liked it. And they go, okay, that's a company I would like to work for. I get my information quickly and fast. I'm able to make decisions based on that, informed decision quite quickly. And then, of course, which was lastly was interesting, we started to see was the referrals started to go up, right? Because what happened, it was 3 times increase in referrals, again, in the span of a year. Because again, what they started to see was that my friends will be looked after when I refer them, right? My colleagues, you know, I'm happy to refer because I know that they will have the experience that I had. You know, the constantly being informed. It's a very important thing when you refer somebody, because it's your name on the line, right? As well. So these are some of the stats.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
So you start by being very clear what is the profile that you're looking for, to make sure that the hiring manager is clear about that, right? And then you create a structure, a kind of a system, right? Which everyone knows how it works, right? And then you give an incredible experience to the candidate, right? That also helps to improve his experience with the company and increase the acceptance rates. Wow, that is really, really, really good. So now tell us, what's some of the questions that you use that helps you to understand if it's the right candidate?
Love that. So the first one is, it's an interesting one. I throw at them quite early on. I never ask them to go for the CV in detail from the, you know, sort of historical order. I go, the first question is, who is XYZ? So I ask them who they are, right? And it sometimes baffles them because, again, we're not quite used to going like, this is me, you know, like, this is who I am. Just like brands, you know, spend millions, right, to develop who they are as a brand. We don't spend a lot of time on it, so it kind of baffles them sometimes. But it's, the responses are incredible, right? Like, it just kind of makes them think, and I get to know them as a summary, as a culmination of everything that they are. The second one, the question I always ask is, you know, which life event has shaped you as a person? Why I ask this is, again, it helps to understand how self-aware are you? Because our experiences are our currency, right? Like, everything that we do in and out of work, it's our passions, our expertise, it's the family affairs, anything that shapes us, our own personal setbacks. These are the ones that shape us. And, you know, if people are able to sort of, you know, draw that conclusion about, like, okay, these events have really, like, it was hard at the time, but it shaped me, and this is why I'm like today. And we're constantly breaking the cycle of the past, right, of the habits and the behaviors. And, you know, having them there, you know, answering these questions is just, I get, again, like, it's like I know them on a much more personal level. And it makes me feel like, oh, I feel like I'm already with your colleague, in a relationship with you. And yeah, phenomenal, phenomenal answers that I've received and brought me closer to another person. It's not even about being talent and a recruiter. It's us in a moment and, you know, sort of sharing the experiences we've had. The third one I always ask is, if you were the CEO of the company, what would you change? This is to evaluate, have you done your company research, basically? And it's not about just taking everything from face value. This is what's going to be. I'm just going to contribute as it is. We'll often, you know, most of the startups, anybody, any company would look at people who come in and are able to change things in a positive direction, if it makes sense, right, in a certain level. So having these conversations has been wonderful as well. And the fourth one I usually use as well is, like, what excites you most about the XYZ industry? Depends which department or which area I'm in recruiting for. And again, it just gives me an understanding how much have they done just general industry research. Because it's not, you know, nothing happens behind the desk, right? Like, you have to be quite sort of glued up to the market, what's happening with competitors, or just generally what's next coming up. And if you put in the time and effort for that, your technical skill sets can be lessened because you constantly can learn anyway, right? So these are some of the ones that I have.
They're pretty good. So that brings me to something I'm curious about. So I read in one of your interviews that you mentioned, we believe everyone is more capable than they appear on a CV, which I find it very interesting. Can you please elaborate more on this?
Yes. It's a big one. Right, because CVs haven't changed since the 1960s, right, which is a long time, in a format, yeah, as we know them today. And that's a long time. Like, we change gadgets every year, and we haven't changed the way we put ourselves out to the world for a very long time. It's something I've been pondering on a lot. I don't have a full solution to it, but what I do know is it's, you know, and companies are starting to do that already, is we can't see you as just a sort of historical sort of culmination of, like, this is one thing after another, but it's all almost like a culmination of everything. The expertise, the companies that you work for, sure, that's important. Universities, education can be, but it can also, how do I say it? It can also kind of conclude false answers there, because people will make decisions based on university only when actually somebody else with a, you know, self-learned certification comes in and actually would be much better for it. So it's really kind of looking at a little bit differently from a perspective of like, how do I draw in the passions that you have or the hobbies? What do you get out of that? Your volunteering experience, all of that, of course, and how did that add up? And I think it comes back to really kind of the profiling of, and you know, of course, that would have to become much more sophisticated with time. And we had the psychometric test for that and whatnot. But it's still yet to kind of see the product that really kind of presents you as who you are in and out of work. I don't have the answers to it yet, as I mentioned, but it's the conversations I like to start having with the industry more, open to all kinds of approaches around this. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some collaboration opportunities to kind of tackle this. But imagine a world where we don't accept CVs anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fundamental change of seeing somebody for who they are as a human being. And how they fit into organizations, which is, organizations is, you know, it's energy, right? Like, it's living sort of organs, and, you know, it's really kind of looking at how does that fit into the whole communal energy that brings, you know, about the culmination of experiences, passions, everything that is, right? Love this topic. I will continue talking about this topic until I find my answer.
So basically today we use a CV, which doesn't allow us to fully understand who is the best fit for the role, because there's a filter we've been doing for many years, which the CV just puts people in boxes. Either it comes from this university or this city, but there's more than that, right? And what you want to break that. How can you go deeper and really understand who is the best talent for this role, independent of the school or the city or or the background? That's a very interesting question. I love that. And now let's talk a little bit. So is there any misconception that you find today at the workplace?
Of course there are quite a few, and misconceptions as such, you know, all of them have a truth, you know, the myths, right, in the workplace. And all of them have a sense of truth, absolutely. But one thing that I've always kind of perhaps haven't been too comfortable with is the data when it goes, you know, the statement, right? Like, it says, like, employers leave their managers, not companies. And having worked in startups myself for, you know, almost all my career, it's always been in startup environments, and generally seeing that in MNC as well, they're trying to adapt that sort of startup mentality and everything that goes with it. And if you constantly put the sort of manager at the center of it, like in terms of like it's always their responsibility with that statement, it's a little bit misleading, right? Like, because if you think about managers today, they're not just there to review and sign off things, perhaps in a way that we always know managers to do in the past in historical terms. Today they manage, they lead, they mentor, they have to guide, they have to protect the team, they have to translate what the business wants to the team back and forth. They have to create a psychologically safe environment for them. They have to develop it's basically create those learning and development paths for them. They have to be there when the employees go through distress or, you know, personal matters. Disputes, anything that is, you know, looking at diversity, it's a lot on one individual's shoulders, and it depends on the company how much support they actually get from outside as well. So for that, it's really kind of, we have to relook at that a little bit, because the data can be misleading. We don't always know what the exit interview actually asks about. So there's an interesting research that Meta did a couple of years ago, because they wanted to know as well, is it true? And their people operation team said, like, no, employers don't lead their managers, they lead the jobs. So what really started to kind of become apparent was when you start getting these exit questions right and really dive deeper, was that it's about the job. Like, is the job now still fulfilling for me? Is it tapping onto my strengths? Is it aligned with my personal aspirations? These are the things that are important that, you know, can be focused on. And I think the data that now shows 75% still, you know, leave because of the managers at one point in their career, I think that will go down when we get more clear about where that data comes from. Because at the end of the day, like, there's another research that, you know, I believe it's a leadership council that has done this, and it's about 56% of people who go the extra mile in the organizations, you know, have an emotional attachment to the job. It's not about the manager, it's not about the team, it's not about the company, it's 56% of emotions. That's a lot of emotions, right? So that's where I always go, like, it's, there's a lot of pressure on the managers, and yes, leaders have a responsibility, they are in this role for a reason. But at the same time, what is the individual's responsibility, right? To become more self-aware. What is important to me? What do I care about? And the job and the company may not even be able to offer that, so I can't force that out from them. At the same time, it's, you know, kind of getting very clear about my skill sets and my, you know, what I like. And what have we done in our organization? And I like that because it's giving the keys back to the individuals a little bit, right? And the questions we ask is, what do you do best? What do you enjoy doing? What don't you do that well? And what don't you enjoy at all? And if you give that permission to the employees who thinks that they have to struggle through that role in the way it is because it's assigned to them, but if you give them a permission to go like, I don't think I'm really good at that part of the job. I'm really good at this, but not this part. That's a good opportunity to go, but actually a team member is really good at that. Like, they enjoy it. It comes naturally to them, swap them around. And we've seen a lot of success with that. Oh. Because people are now floating into places that, like, this is aligned with what I'm good at. It comes naturally to me, because that's when they talk about, you know, when does a job become your hobby? Because hobby is about, like, it's something that comes naturally to you. So it's also giving a permission to employees to go, not very good at this. Like, yeah. Is it okay we change around something here? If the headcount is not there, do you find another person or whatnot? So this is something, yeah, I think the industry could talk a little bit differently about.
So there's a lot of pressure on the manager, which they have their responsibility and their role. But what you say is that there's also a lot of responsibility on each individual to work on themselves, on their self-awareness, so that they also know this is the place for me. This is what I love, right? And on the other part, there's also the responsibility of the companies to make sure that they give the right guidance and prepare the managers to help the employees. I like that.
Yeah.
So now maybe you can give any, what would be one tip that you have such a great experience. What is one tip that you can give on how to improve the talent acquisition in one organization?
Again, companies are so different. Some companies can't invest into TA, right? And they have other people doing and duplicating in their roles. But as much as people, companies can, if they could, because they're experts in their own right, they're going to escalate the experience for everybody. If you find the right person into talent acquisition, you know, HR talent acquisition, that kind of whoever covers it. I know one company that went to become a very successful people-oriented business. They had a CEO and a founder, and the second hire was not sales, was not anything else than HR. He knew that he wants to make this company a people-focused company. So the HR worked with the person to grow the business, basically. And I thought that was a fundamental shift in how do we think about the investment when we... It's almost like, you know, like if we talk that, you know, people are really important, like show it. And I think that CEO founder really showed it, that I care about people. I'm going to invest into talent acquisition, HR first. And that's when we start growing the business.
I really like that. I mean, everyone says it's their focus on people, but what you say, like, show me, right?
Yes.
And that's a way to show that you are really serious about people. I think that's a great tip. Okay, we're coming to the end. Like, this went so fast. We were so excited in this really, really interesting topic. So now I would like to ask you, so people ask you a lot of questions.
Yeah.
What is one question that people didn't ask you and you would love to answer?
It's a good one. I think it comes back to my own interview question that I always ask. You know, it's just interview, it's almost actually my social question as well. So, which life event has shaped you as a person? That's the question.
And what was that event?
Oh,
you asked the question and now I have to be prepared. So it's interesting, right? Like I was quite young when I started to get a little bit fidgety. I was like, I need to, you know, I'm from Estonia and it was quite a small country and I was like, I need to see the world. So I moved away from there 15 years ago. I went to the US, I went to UK, and then I came to Singapore, and that definitely has absolutely had a huge impact on me, who I was back then, who I am today. But in the meantime, it's also like really capturing these times when we have, when I've had these heavy setbacks in life. And I would say about sort of seven years ago, it was when I hit a little bit of a rock bottom in life, and that was really kind of, it was because I was very misaligned with where I was going, what I was doing. I hadn't put in the conscious time to become clear about what is important to me, what values do I have. So I was in collision with the external world. I mean, that just naturally, that's where you go. So it also meant that I had to do a lot of huge life changes, pretty much drastic ones overnight as well, because sometimes as well, I have to look at what am I using externally to kind of still keep me going, but my body and mind just not able to keep up anymore. And that has resulted in me building a community around me, again, of people who believe in the same way of like, sometimes these changes have to be rapid and fast and we have to move forward, but it isn't just a one-time thing. It's about being accountable then to yourself as well, that this change has happened. It's a daily thing for me now. I constantly have to evaluate myself. Where am I at? Where are my fears or, you know, whatever that is coming up to the surface and either are stopping me from moving forward or making me move too fast, you know? And that's been it's been a profound experience. I mean, I would like to say, and it's a big statement, but I think my life changed back then. And I've been given a few kind of chances to restart my life and build a much, how to say, purpose-filled life that I'm really happy about today.
Nice. So you were able to, all the challenges, see that opportunity to go deeper and to reinvent yourself. And now here you are. Look
that's
at
it,
you.
That's it. I've got a question for you too.
Uh-oh.
There you go. I'm always fascinated when people make a complete change in their careers and they go, okay, this is it. This is what I have to focus on. And what you're doing is incredible, like the way it brings communities together. What was the moment, you know, that you knew you have to do this? It's almost like a must. It's a calling. Tell me about that moment.
That's a good question. So I think I've been always feeling this urge to help people to grow. And I had many opportunities in my life with my teams. But last year, my company decided to close the office. So then I had to go into also a reflection mode. Mm. And that was, I went deeper, asking deeper questions. But this question of serving, it was very, very, very deep in me. So I started to feel, now I want to serve. I learned so much. In my previous organizations, I have an incredible opportunity, many experiences, and now I want to give back. So that was the moment that I felt like, okay, now it's about serving, and now this is just one of the parts, which is the podcast, mm-hmm. about bringing, inspiring people like you to you know, to question things and to bring things forward, you know, yeah. And I'm really passionate about it. And I'm really now looking forward to help people to really build environments so other people can thrive. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Mm. Well done.
Wow, thank you for the question. Good, so we coming to the end. There was so much that I learned a lot. And so what I learned is about, in terms of talent acquisition, I think the importance of first, be clear about what you want. What is the profile? Mm. Second, it's about really build a flow, a system where everyone is aligned with that, you know, and you measure that. And then you focus on giving an incredible experience to the candidate. And that process is really, really, really fast, and it works really, really well. So I really like that. And I also like you bringing also more the responsibility for the individual to work on themselves, right? To be more clear about what do I want, you know? So that then when they go to a company, then it's easier for the company to just to guide and to make them thrive. So I really enjoyed our conversation. I love your energy and your smile.
Thanks.
And it was very, very insightful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rodrigo.